Parashat Noach invites us to reflect on the relationship between society and the individual. The introduction of its main character raises a central question. What is our role when we live within a corrupt society? How should we conduct ourselves when leaders are not guided by the values we hold dear, and when many individuals disagree with us about what is good, just, and right? Our parasha calls us to consider the choices of the first individual who found himself in such a situation, offering a foundational examination of the relationship between the individual and society. The Torah tells us that Noach was righteous and wholehearted in a generation that was neither. God saw, the Torah tells us, how great was the human wickedness on earth, how every plan devised by the human mind was nothing but evil all the time. Noach was a righteous and wholehearted man in his generation. Noach walked with God, and the earth was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence, for all the flesh had corrupted its way upon the earth. Noach is described in relationship to his contemporaries, bedorotav, in his generation. Through the different interpretations of the word, I will offer a look into the characteristics of those relationships. Are they confrontational or based in dialogue? Are they characterized by rejection or connection? Is his conduct despite his generation or in response to it? And what can we learn from this about the options available to us in our relationship with a society that seems to us corrupt, destructive, and decayed? Who is Noach, this lone figure standing in contrast to people of his time? One striking midrashic interpretation reduces Noah's distinctiveness almost to nothing. The Babylonian Talmud states, "Even upon Noach was the decree of judgment passed." This midrash seems to suggest an interpretation of the word bedorotav, in his generation, as meaning together with, similar to, among his generation. In other words, the phrase claims that Noach was like the fellows of his time and subject to their fate. This interpretation carries two implications. First, since it suggests that Noach was no different than any other individual of his generation, it highlights that the question of how I, as a single individual, should conduct myself in relation to the society around me is a fundamental one, not limited to leaders, nor is it reserved for exceptional figures. No human being can evade this question. It is one that must be asked by all. Second, according to the Midrash, judgment was decreed upon Noach just as upon the rest of his generation. But even when fate seems imposed, the possibility of choice remains. When we live in an age of oppression and destruction, we may feel that our fate is determined by our environment, that we have no power to stop evil, that we are doomed to be part of a corrupt system. The Midrash clarifies that neither helplessness nor lack of influence releases a person from the responsibility of choice. Noach, for example, had a choice of whether to do what God asked him or not. Even when we feel that reality is being imposed upon us, even when our fate seems sealed together with that of our generation, we must still examine our relationship with the society around us. We still have a choice, even if it feels that our freedom and capabilities are limited. So how does Noach, who is portrayed here as simply one among his fellows, choose to act? A central voice of various commentators claims that Noach's righteousness was expressed in his behavior and intentions while living amidst an evil generation. In other words, the essence of Noach's behavior was that he acted differently. The Ramban, for example, explains he was a righteous man, for he was not a man of violence, nor did he corrupt his ways like the people of his generation who were guilty. But rather he cleaved to God alone always and walked in the way that God had chosen or would show him. The Ramban emphasizes that Noach's choice was twofold. He chose not to be like his generation, a righteous man in contrast to his generation, and he chose a particular path, adhering to a particular standard, in this case, the way of God. The Ramban adds a poignant observation about Noach's existential experience. He understands the word in his generation, Bedorotav, as pointing to the essence of Noach's life experience. He alone was righteous in those generations. There was no righteous and wholehearted man in his generation beside him. The Ramban focuses on Noach's experience and explains that when the social norm is violence, corruption, and destruction, it is lonely to do good. He sees Noach's otherness among his generation in Noach's demand of himself to cling to values and standards different from those of his society. So Noach chose a value-laden and ethical mode of behavior, and he did so despite the loneliness of that choice. Another voice in the Midrashic tradition imagines Noach moving among the people of his generation, trying to influence his society to act with righteousness, honesty, and goodness. He attempts to speak to them in different ways, rebuking them in the hope that they will repent, speaking harsh words, threatening them. What all these voices share is the picture of Noach in dialogue with his contemporaries, in which he shares both his moral understanding and his grasp of the consequences of their actions in an effort to make them change their ways. For example, Rabbi Yossi, quoted in the Babylonian Talmud, explains, Noach the righteous would rebuke them and say to them, "Repent, and if not, the Holy Blessed One will bring the flood upon you." He portrays Noach on a mission of persuasion, his goal being to lead his generation to change from what the Torah describes as evil, violent, and corrupt behavior. Perhaps Rabbi Yossi is not satisfied with the interpretive approach that sees Noach merely choosing to live an upright and life-affirming path for himself, nor with Noach's solitude in doing so. Perhaps he maintains that in order to be a righteous, wholehearted man in his generation, more is required, an active stance towards the generation, an engagement with the society in which one lives, including the refusal to accept the evil that surrounds him and the need to actively reject, resist, and engage. So how does Noach choose to act? He chooses to be an individual in conversation with his society, to be a figure who tries to persuade his generation to change by offering an alternative path, possibly by threatening, by warning, by reflecting on the consequences of their deeds. Noah does one more thing. He builds an ark. What is the essence of this act? Of course, it shows obedience to God. In addition, at its essence, the act of building the ark is an act of building a future. The ark is the platform which saves humans and animals and assures the existence of a next generation. One might see this as giving up on the present, an acceptance of evil, moral decay, and destructiveness. I suggest to interpret it as reflecting an understanding that despite the reality of a broken, ruined, violent, and wounded world, Noach adopts a forward-facing attitude. He believes something will be left, and the world will require rebuilding. Noach exerts his efforts to lay the groundwork for the future restoration. Thus, another fundamentally different answer to the question of how does Noach choose to act is that Noach chooses not to focus on the present, not merely to be confrontational in a world filled with violence and corruption, but instead to look towards the future, to prepare for it, to ensure that when change is possible, there will be a foundation for that which can stand. Noach, as the first human being who must decide the nature of the relationship between the individual and society, serves as a paradigm for the relationship between a person and the collective. He confronts us with the question of how a person should act in a world which they perceived is filled with people doing evil, engaging in exploitation and destruction. We have seen a variety of answers, all based on interpretations of the phrase in his generation, Bedorotav. First, even if individuals are like any other ordinary people, so to speak, they must still confront the conduct of society. Second, we saw that in such circumstances, the choice to act as one believes has existential implications and may lead to loneliness. Third, the individual has to make the choice of whether to try to change the behavior of their contemporaries. And finally, there exists the option to focus on the future, even if that means, to some degree, giving up on the present. These different answers arise in particular times and circumstances as alternatives. Sometimes, several of them can be chosen in parallel. They claim that even when facing a society whose trajectory is understood as destructive evil or corrosive moral decay, and even when we feel helpless, still possibilities exist before us. As Rabbi Tarfon says, it is not our duty to complete the work, but neither are we free to desist from it. Shabbat Shalom.